Hey everybody, welcome to this OSS on Azure technical series. This one is on Node.js, so creating apps for the web using Node.js on Azure. So this is a pretty exciting topic. I know I'm excited about it. I'm one of your hosts, Jeremy Foster, and I'm joined by Tommy Patterson. I'm coming from a bit of a developer perspective. I'm a developer. I like writing apps for Node. And Tommy comes from an IT pro perspective. So he's used to deploying apps and managing apps, doing all the DevOps and things like that. So we're going to be talking to you about this exciting topic from these two different unique perspectives today. So myself, a little bit about myself, Jeremy Foster. I've been developing software for quite some time. I'm a developer evangelist at Microsoft, and I tend to stick to the web platform. I've been writing web apps for many years. It's my niche, and so anything JavaScript is fun for me, and I'm these days writing JavaScript on the server, JavaScript on the client, JavaScript on robots, JavaScript pretty much anywhere I can. So that's a little bit about me. How you doing, Tommy? You want to introduce yourself?
Yep, great, Jeremy. This is a fantastic time at Microsoft. I think, you know, a lot of people still don't even know to consider us when it comes to cloud and Node.js because they don't know that we do all the things we do. And that's from both a developer and an IT pro perspective. I think what we're doing right now is super exciting. The amount of scale that we have with the ability to roll out to multiple data centers across the world, the way we are able to integrate with all the popular tools of today, you know, GitHub and all the different social media and such that come along with that, really helps us, put ourselves on a new tier from, say, monolithic Microsoft of the decades past. So very cool stuff. A little bit about me. 17 years in IT pro, and basically for me, I went through all of the hurdles of help desk, network engineer, and my last stint was consulting before I came over to Microsoft, where I did a lot of capacity management, performance and management monitoring for VMware environments. So I took a little bit of a break from Microsoft in my career. I did start there with an MCSE, so you see the NT4O, but then I kind of skipped a couple iterations. I did get my 2012 certification, but my most recent one was Azure. So I went through the test for Azure and went through learning all about the different aspects to get certified. Highly recommended if you're trying to get started in cloud. It's a great way to push yourself to learn new things. Take a look at those tests. They're a really good challenge. Here's some contact information for me. If you're in the Atlanta area, I do meetups, and I make sure I keep up with all the meetups going on my site. But if you're not, hit me up on LinkedIn. Also, here's my email address if you have any questions. And if you haven't tried out Azure, here's a link that'll let you take a test spin for 30 days. You can also find blog stuff at virtuallycloud9.com. That's where I do most of my blogging. I do have a TechNet presence as well. So, Jeremy, why don't you talk us through why Node first?
All right. Well, there's a number of reasons why a person might want to consider Node. I think that Node is easy. Of course, that's subjective, but I recently made a blog post, Tommy, where I kind of challenged myself to write a web server in Node using one line of code. And it's certainly possible. It's probably not recommended for production scenarios, but it's really very easy to get started with Node because a lot of the heavy lifting has been done for you by others in the community. The code's already been written out there. And that's the most exciting thing about it. You can see on this chart that there's, since about 2010, been a really sharp uptake in Node popularity, and people are writing it. The code ends up being quite terse. It's well organized. You have code in the right places. My code isn't here. And whenever I bring in a module from somebody else, their code is over there, and everything's really well organized and understandable from a developer's perspective. So that's great. It takes advantage of the versatility and ubiquity of JavaScript. It's kind of everywhere, and it's really flexible and dynamic and can kind of do anything. And that adds to, at the beginning, just a little bit of a I'm not sure which way to go feeling. But once you get on top of a couple of concepts in JavaScript, boy, you just feel like you can do anything that you want. coming along with this really rich community of app developers that are writing on top of Node is a really good package management system. There are over 170 packages in the store right now, and it's growing really fast. The last time I did a presentation on it was 150,000, and before that 130. So it's just a sharp climb in the number of packages that people are pushing out there. And that's good news for you if you're a developer, because that means when it's time to, say, handle dates and times, right, you don't have to write that code. You just go bring in a package like moment.js, and you bring in that Node module, and all that's been done for you. Then now writing dates and times is the easiest thing in the world.
Very cool. So let's talk about the philosophical difference between, you know, Node.js and server-side and client-side frameworks before we jump into how to do these things.
So the Node.js, I want people to understand, is a application that sits on the server side. It gets kind of confusing in this space, again, in the JavaScript space, in the web framework space, because things move really fast. In fact, I like to listen to a podcast that is 5 minutes of JavaScript and just tells you, like, here are the frameworks that are coming out. This one's popular, this one's not, because it's so hard to keep up with all these things. But I want you to understand that Node.js is a server-side framework. And so it's going to be sitting next to frameworks like Ruby on Rails, Java Server Pages, PHP, and Microsoft's ASP.NET. And really what these are is application frameworks that run on the server, and they are looking at your database, looking at your other business logic in your organization, and they are compiling or dynamically building HTML and sending that down to the client. And sometimes that makes all the sense in the world. For instance, if you've got a company database and you need an API that provides that data to services whenever they, or to client-side applications whenever they request it, that's perfect, a perfect job for a server-side framework. Now, on the client side, there's so much functionality that's going into the client side that it's starting to feel like it's replacing it. It's not really. There's still stuff that you want to do on the server and stuff that you want to do on the client. But on the client side, we've got things like Angular and Bootstrap and Knockout and React and a whole ton more. And what these are is an attempt to add a lot of capability and functionality on the client side so that it doesn't need the server if it doesn't have to have it, and so that we don't have to keep doing round trips to the server in order to render our pages. We can handle everything, but if we need some data from the server, then we can go request that from a server-side framework. So I just want you to understand that when you write Node.js, you are writing JavaScript, but it's not alongside one of these client-side frameworks. It's on the server. And it's the only one of those technologies where you're writing JavaScript on the server, whereas the other ones you're writing either C# or Visual Basic or Java or Ruby or PHP.
Great. So true or false, Node.js is 100% JavaScript?
This is a popular misnomer. A lot of people think that it is 100% JavaScript, but that's false. It's not 100% JavaScript. It just runs your JavaScript. Node.js is written in C++. It's a very highly performant server-side application framework. It's a collection of it's a collection of assemblies that it facilitates you writing something in JavaScript, and it uses the V8 engine to translate that JavaScript and do something out of it. So I feel like that that question clears some things up for some people sometimes.
Okay, so what I want to do now is let's jump into Microsoft Azure, what it can do, but just from a holistic perspective, and then we're going to drill down. And I promise this isn't marketing. This is just to talk through the different tiers and layers so we understand where we're headed. App services, meaning doing things like identity, so Azure Active Directory and pass-through authentication and those type of things. Mobile services, interacting with mobile devices. But today is web apps or websites to people that aren't, you know, up on the nomenclature of Azure. So web apps, once we dig into that, web apps are all based on top of virtual machines that we manage, right? At Microsoft. Now, there's also web apps you can build on top of virtual machines that you manage as an admin. Today, we're focusing on those web apps that you do not have to worry about managing the underlying OS. but you can do that. Then there's that data tier from a SQL database, HD Insight, Hadoop, table storage, and blob storage. That core service that Azure offers, which is probably one of the most important ones, especially if you're looking, you know, at the Gartner Magic Quadrants on who can do what in the cloud. If you can't do data storage and data services well, you probably shouldn't be in the game. So we have a lot of flexibility there. It ties directly into what we're talking about today, and we're not going to touch on it too much because we could probably do a whole 1 hour session on that, right? But just wanted to show that, talk about how it works, and then and we'll go on to the next piece. Now, from a compute perspective in Azure, virtual machines being at the top here for degree of customization, right? So we talk about not needing those, the administration of those for doing web apps if you're doing them from a PaaS perspective or a platform as a service. If you notice the bottom right where web apps is, that's the speed of development. It's the quickest to develop for, it's quickest to use, and you're coming down on cost at the same time. So that's the way things are running. And from a, if you're an enterprise play, then what you're trying to do is move from an IaaS perspective or infrastructure as a service, virtual machine perspective, to a platform as a service, and then ultimately, hopefully, to a software as a service perspective. Brings that cost down even more and more flexibility to the customer. So if you're in a startup, most times what I'm seeing in startup now is they're starting off with a PaaS play and going directly that way. Just depends on what you're trying to work on. So again, today we're going to be focusing on PaaS. Okay, so the production portal in Azure, this is the one that's been around for quite a while now. It lets you do pretty much everything we can do in Azure. We have a new portal called the Preview Portal, which I'm going to touch on next. But first I want to touch on the production portal, because if you're doing things in production, just know there's better support for most of the features in the production portal. You can still get support in the preview portal. Just know that there are a lot of features that are still in test that you you want to be careful with. So as we look at the new production or at the old production portal, what you're going to see is all items when you first log in. This is everything in your account: network, storage, cloud services. If you're using Recovery Vault, you're going to see that type of stuff. You're going to see your Active Directory in Azure, which comes with every account. So when you sign up, you're going to have an Active Directory account. It's going to be built into your subscription. That comes by default. Okay, so if you notice the bottom left-hand corner of that portal, you're going to see the new button, right? And I'm going to walk through this in demo, but I just want to highlight the new button's where the journey begins, okay? And it's funny that I use the word journey, because in the preview portal, we actually call them journeys. But I'll go ahead and skip through that part of it. So if I hit the new button, it's basically going to let me pick from a gallery. If I pick if I want to go into web apps, it's going to let me pick from a gallery and see what's available. Today we're focused on Node.js. Notice there's a starter site option and an empty web app option. You select one, you give it a name, and you're off and running. Very simple, very quick and easy. Switching to the preview portal, in the top right hand corner of your browser, you'll see where you can drop down where your name is, your login ID, and you'll see switch to the Azure preview portal. That'll let you jump into the new preview portal, see how things look there. I like it because the preview portal gives you a better chance of seeing things like, hey, where do I stand with my spending? How can I monitor individual components? How can I also manage the resources a little easier from a security perspective? Maybe you have multiple people on your team and you need to make sure you can restrict who can see what. The new preview portal gives you that capability because it's built on top of the resource manager framework. So looking at the preview portal, couple of things to take away here. You can see your current billing. You can pin resources to the dashboard, so you can create your own dashboard based on any of the objects that you're managing. You can also see, you can browse for just about anything that you've already created. And on the left-hand side, you're going to see a little mini toolbar where you can start new things, new journeys, or take a look at different settings and whatnot. Now, I'm going to be jumping into the preview portal pretty quickly here. One other thing I want to show off. When you're looking at web apps, you notice it's going to, say you click on your web app, it's going to open up a new frame, right, in the journey, or a new slice of your journey, per se, out to the right. Each one of these are collapsible, so you can get rid of them and go back to where you started. Everything opens out to the right and scales over to the side. And this is a mobile-friendly browser edition of the portal as well. All right, so I did speak about this, but pinning things to the start board. When you have different objects, now in this case, I created a Node.js site. I created it in East US. We're not really talking a whole lot about architecture on this call, but just know that when you say you're creating something in East US, that means it's going to be closer to your customer base in the East US from a geography standpoint. And for APAC and for Europe, you have different options there to choose. Make sure you choose the one that's closest to your customer base. That's a speed and latency solver in itself. Okay, so you can pin those to your start board. That way you can get to them very quickly to manage. And this is just an example of what it looks like. What I'm going to do now is jump in and show just a brief demo of what we have, talk through the different aspects of how Node.js can be deployed from both a GA portal or production portal and the preview portal. So let me hop into that. Okay, so I'm already logged in. If you haven't logged in before, manage.windowsazure.com or azure.microsoft.com, either one of those URLs will work. Once you're logged in, you're going to see all items at the top. So if I click on this, you'll see everything I have deployed in Azure. But if you go to web apps, you'll see the web apps we have deployed. Now, I've already cooking show style, I've already pre-deployed a site and a dev slot. We haven't talked about slots yet. Very cool stuff. And I'll get to that in a minute. But this lets me jump in and look at what I've created, and I'll show you how in just a second. The dashboard lets you see usage, HTTP server errors, data in and out, CPU time. It lets you scale. If you look at the auto scale status, you can go and configure auto scaling. So let's say you've built out a production site. It'll let you say, hey, let's run multiple instances of this website. No code changes required on your side, so long as your code was developed with a multi-instance in mind and pointing to a centralized data source. So very, very easy to do for auto scaling, right? You can see your file system usage. This is the file system on the local virtual machines in Azure that are holding your sites, right? So as you look at what your file sizes are and whatnot, you may need to up the way you're doing storage or put something in central storage. And we definitely have media services for that if you're doing any type of streaming or audio or video, pictures. If you're trying to do content distribution across the world, you can tie into that too. I'm not going to go into that today too deeply, but notice you'll see that here. On the right-hand side, you'll see your connection strings, your deployment credentials, and you can also see the URL. So I want to hit this real quickly. We provide a URL for every site that gets created. You can certainly bring on custom domains that will overlap on top of this and become the resolver for your site, right? But we always create one for you by default, and it will always be azurewebsites.net. Test question, by the way, if you're going for certification. Every time you see azurewebsites.net, you know we're talking about web apps, right? And so you see your FTP hosts, you see your logs, where the logs are being held, location, where I deployed to, and then what subscription I deployed to. This is key, right? Now, I'm going to go over to my scale tab just to highlight real quickly where we are with this. Now, free edition comes with 10 free sites, but you can't change your URLs. Shared edition lets you do a little bit more, so I can do a little bit more customization. But when you get to basic and standard, that's when you can start getting into scaling and the size of the instance that you're running, how many instances you're running. At the standard level, you can schedule things. You can say, hey, I need to scale up because major shopping season coming up for my customers. I need to scale up to, say, 5-10 machines during the day, but scale back down at night because we know there's not going to be any usage. You can also scale based on CPU utilization. You know, so watching the CPU cycles on your on the virtual machines that are running your apps, you can say scale up to 3 or 4 instances based on certain levels of CPU percentages. So really easy to scale, very simple to use. This is the production portal. I want to show you the new piece where you can create new apps. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, save time today. New web app from gallery. And this is going to bring up our gallery. I showed you this in the slides. Just want to highlight really quickly, there's a ton of stuff in here. Forum templates, wiki templates, CMS, blogs. I, in fact, host Virtually Cloud 9 is hosted on a WordPress blog on Azure that I deployed here. And it's important to note here, WordPress scales too instantly. So I can go in and do my scaling right there from the scaling tab. Very simple to use, very easy to do. Saved me a ton of money from my previous hosting provider. So if I scroll down, I will come to the Node.js section. I have Node.js empty web app and a starter site. I'm just going to go ahead and hit the empty web app for now. Next, give it a name. Now keep in mind, this name has to be unique. So unique name. Because this is resolvable across the world and live as soon as you publish. If you go to the web scale group, this is just going to be where do I want to put it. And this really comes in more into play in the preview portal. But East US is where I'm located. I'm out of Atlanta. So my user base generally is in an Atlanta area. I want to keep it close. So I'm going to hit that. And if I hit the check mark, it's going to go out and create my web app. Now I've already done that, so I'm not going to go through that piece with you. But just notice that in this portal, you have notifications. They'll be in the bottom right. And let's flip over now and go into the preview portal. So if I go up to my name, my login ID, switch to the preview portal, that's going to take me here. All right. Notice I've already pinned that web app that I created. Now, how do I get started if I didn't have that done already in the preview portal? New, top left, web and mobile, web app. And I just go ahead and define a name. This is going to create an empty shell where I can attach to GitHub or upload my own code. Same as we did in the production portal. And what we're going to do is arrive at a running web app with nothing in it, or you know, if you've already predetermined, put your code in there and predetermine your linkages to, say, GitHub or you know, any other repository that you're trying to connect to. That would show up and start working. But take a look at what all you see here. You see the All Settings button? That'll bring up and let me see all types of different things I can change. Application settings, custom domains and SSL, traffic routing. Traffic routing's huge, especially if you're doing multi-geography. So I can say, you know what, I've got this site running in the east, running in the west, running over in Japan, China, Australia, wherever we have data centers. You can say, I need to route some of my traffic here, but for those users that are in, say, Japan, route them to my Japanese deployed web app, right? And Traffic Manager handles that for you pretty much seamlessly, and it's basically smart DNS, okay? Now, from a deployment slots perspective, deployment slots is where it gets really exciting. I touched on this earlier, but deployment slots say, you know what? We're going to have a dev slot, test slot, production slot. Each one of those slots can have its own unique code. By adding a slot, so if I go up to add slot, I'm able to go in and say, you know what? This is going to be my prod site. So I'm just going to say prod. I can clone from either my dev slot or my test slot right there and click OK. It's going to go out now and create a new instance of my site and bring up the same code that I stood at with my dev cycle. So hold on, let me do a refresh here. Lost my connectivity. Beautiful. And come right back up. Hopefully leave off right where I left off. The joy of demo live. So let's see. Another place to see my slots. There we go. Okay, so it did create it. We're good to go. I see my prod slot. And notice when I go into that blade, what I'll see is a swap button. That lets me swap users from hitting that dev slot or the test slot to seeing the production site, right? I can always hit my URL. It's going to take me out to my site and launch. And so here we are. There is my deployed site. I don't have any code in there yet, but I can always hook up to it, use tools such as Visual Studio, Visual Studio Online, or Web Matrix, and push some code in there, manipulate the site and the settings. And there's tons of tools inside of Visual Studio that'll let you work with the Azure components that you've deployed. That's a high level look at what all you can do from a portal perspective. So what we want to do now is turn it back over to Jeremy. Jeremy, why don't you talk us through from a coding perspective and from some PowerShell how we might deploy the same thing.
Okay, thanks, Tommy. Yeah, so this is going to get a whole lot geekier right now. There are a couple of different ways of looking at Node from a high-level IT perspective. How is this thing going to be deployed? What are the considerations regarding where people are coming from, the geographies? How am I handling scale and different considerations like that? But then you're going to have a number of JavaScript developers that are actually going to be writing your Node.js applications, and that's who I'm targeting. That's who I am. So I'm going to start off with a quick demo of how you would go about installing Node on a workstation. Okay, this isn't in Azure in the cloud. That's already done for you. But on your development machine, how do you go about installing Node? And it's actually just extremely easy. You go out to nodejs.org, and this is on Windows. And there are a couple of different ways to do it, but I think that the easiest way to do it is the classic: go to the website and click the big green install button. That runs you through an easy next finish. And now, after that installation, you have both Node and NPM installed on your machine. It does a good job of adding it to your path, so it's automatically available on your command line and everything. Okay, so that's nodejs.org. Now, nodejs.org is an important website, basically just for the installation, but then later for the documentation. And another important website to be aware of is npm.js. We'll look at that in just a second. I'm going to go ahead and jump down to my command shell here, and I'm going to type the word Node, and that will tell you right off if you have Node installed. I, in fact, have run through the installation, so when I type Node, I get this little angle brace. Now I'm at what we call a REPL, a read, it's R-E-P-L, read, execute, print loop. And a REPL is just a word for an environment where I can type in some code and immediately get the results of that. Let me just go ahead and type some JavaScript. Let's just create a variable called x that equals 10. That statement does not return anything, so it says undefined, but in fact I just set x equal to 10, and now I can say x, I can say x plus 1. I'm just writing JavaScript here, okay? We can exit, actually, don't type exit, we type control C a couple times. The other way to do that is to type control D. So I just proved to myself that I in fact have Node running on this machine. And in fact, I have NPM as well. So if I type NPM, it's going to give me a little bit of help about what I can do with NPM. So more on those in just a second. We just are assured that we have it actually running on our machine. So let's jump back to our slides here. Okay, so first of all, I'm just going to mention this. I'm not going to show it, but Node has versions. It's up to version 12 point something right now. And when you're in Azure, you're running on a certain version, and you have the option by just specifying it in your configuration files which version you want Azure to use for running Node for your application. So if you have certain dependencies that say require version 11.6 for some reason, then you can tell Azure, please use Node version 11.6 for this application. Now on your local machine, if you're running on Windows, the preferred there's a thing called a Node Version Manager, and the preferred one for Windows is called Nodist, N-O-D-I-S-T. And Nodist works really well. You can go to that GitHub site and look at the instructions for installing it. Works quite well, and it allows you on your workstation to immediately switch from, say, version 11.6 to version 12.4 and back and forth very easily. So that's pretty important. Okay, let's look at, we already looked at the REPL. Let's look at a little bit of script execution. Okay, so I'm going to jump back to the command line here, and I'm going to make a directory called my first node app. I'm going to cd into that. And so here we are. There's nothing that exists yet. But let's go ahead and create a script document. So let's say touch app.js. And what I do with touch is just create a document. So now I have app.js. And let's open, I tend to use higher level editors, but I'm going to open this in Notepad just so it doesn't feel like there's anything magic going on. So I've got this open in Notepad, and I'm going to type var x equals 10. And then I'm going to do a console log x plus 1. So what I expect for this to do is create me a variable with a called x with a value of 10, and then log that out to the screen as 11 because I'm adding 1 to it. So let's save that, close it. And now if you look at app.js, it actually has a length now, so it exists. Let's type app.js. There it is. Okay, now I want to execute that. And I execute it with the node command, node and then app.js. And in fact, node gives you the facility that you don't have to always type your extensions. You can just say node app. So I'm going to node app, and it's going to print 11 on the screen. Now that process spun up. It started, it spun up, and then it did what it was asked to do, and then it died because it was over. It didn't have anything else to execute. Now when this is running your website in the cloud, it's in some sort of a web server loop where it's going to stay alive and constantly be waiting for web requests and constantly be giving web responses to folks. But this one just kind of spun up and died. Okay, so you've seen us install Node. We've gone to the REPL and done a little something easy. And we've also created a script and done something really easy. But one of the powers of Node is its module and module facility. So modules are a really cool concept that allow you to write some of your code in a different place for organization's sake. Okay, you can put them in separate files, and then you can bring those files in quite easily. So I'm going to just list this out again so you can see that I just have this app.js. Now let me say touch module1.js, and then go to Notepad. module1.js, and in here I can type whatever JavaScript I want, and everything that I want this module to result in, I return to module exports. So let's just say module exports equals 50. Okay, so normally you'll be setting this to a function or an object with a whole bunch of functionality behind it, but for illustration's sake, let's just set it to something like 50, and then we'll close that. Yeah, save changes. Now we'll notepad our app.js file. And now instead of saying x equals 10, we'll say x equals, now watch this, require, and then I say I want my module1.js. Okay, so I'm bringing in a module using the require statement, and the result of that module, in other words, whatever it is that we set exports equal to, is going to come in here and now be the value of x. So I'm going to expect this to export 51. Let's go ahead and close that. Node app, that's how we execute that app. And remember, we're not executing the module, that's just being referenced from app. And in fact, it says 51, so that's good news. So that's a module, that's us creating our own module. Now, Node gives you a number of modules, but this touches on a philosophical difference between some of the other web server-side web frameworks and Node. Node is very light. There's not a lot of stuff that's packed into it, okay? A few core modules that are important for you to have right off the bat, but if you need to do something with date times, it's not really in there. You need to go get something from NPM, and this is good because this means that it's easy for you to swap out. It's easy for somebody to create a better one and for it to rise in popularity. You only take what you need. There's a lot of really big advantages to that. So we looked at importing a custom module. Now let's look at importing what we call a core module. This is one that I don't have to write. See, module one exists, but let's go ahead and run back into app.js. And now instead of requiring module one, or in addition to it, I guess, we can require something else. We're going to require HTTP. Now this is require HTTP. Notice I didn't prefix this with a dot slash. This is a directory indicator that also tells Node, hey, this is a local custom module that I made. If you don't put one on there, it says, all right, I'm going to have to go looking for this. And the first thing it does is say, do I have any core modules with this name? And in fact, it does. So we have the HTTP module there. Now, I'm going to comment this line out and comment this line out. And now I'm just going to console log. And I'm going to console log out the entire HTTP object that I just created. Okay, we'll see what that actually results in. So let's node app. And you see that I get this gigantic file that with all of these, it's like a big object, a big JavaScript object. In fact, that's exactly what it is. The HTTP module is a big JavaScript object that gives you a whole bunch of functionality. And in fact, we'll look at a little bit of that functionality in just a second. Okay, so Node Package Manager is the way for the way that you will go about getting other modules, not modules that are that you wrote and not modules that are core to Node, but not modules that somebody else wrote and offer up to the community. Like I said, 170,000 plus modules and counting. Actually, let's go look at this now. 174,153 total packages. That's pretty awesome. You can go to the npmjs.org and research these. It does a good job of showing you all the popular ones first. So this gives you a good idea of what people are using. These are the ones that people install a lot. And then you can go down and look at the ones that are most dependent upon. The most dependent upon package is this one called Lodash that's written by a guy I know here in Seattle. And it's a really great alternative to underscore.js. It's highly performant, and so many people depend on Lodash that it has become the most dependent upon package. So that's pretty impressive. But you can research these in here. You can look for, here's one that I wrote called Candyman, and you can find it. There it is, written by Code Foster. You can drill into it, and there's a description of it, a little bit of an example of how to use it, and you can see how many times it's been used. That one's not an extremely popular one. But if you go to something like Express, Express is a web framework that is extremely popular. And you can drill into that. And most of these will link you directly to their GitHub. So you can jump right to the source code and start collaborating on the code of the project, because a lot of these are open source. So that's pretty impressive. Okay, so Express, the name of the package is Express, and to use that, it's actually very simple. Let's jump back to our app.js that we already have open here, and instead of opening HTTP, instead of requiring HTTP, let's require Express. So there we go. Now we have Express. I'll go ahead and delete that. And I could console log that out, but that doesn't do a whole lot of good, so let's actually go ahead and make an app. Here's my app, and that equals Express. And Express, what returns from this is a function, so I can call that function, and that creates my app. And then this is pretty fun. I can say app get. Now that defines a get route, and I get to specify my route. So I could say, for instance, API/users if I wanted to. Let's just define the root route for now, though. So there's the root route, and I'll say function. And I want to do that. This is just the signature of the function that's expected. And now I'm defining what happens when somebody comes to my website at the root directory. What do I want to do? And I want to say the response.send, and I want to send hello there. All right. Now, believe it or not, that's all it takes to write an Express web app. It's not actually going to run yet. I'll show you that. If I say node app, it says, I can't find module Express. Now, I told you that you can use your custom modules and you can use the core modules, and we didn't have to do anything. But when you use a module that's a third-party module, you have to install it. And the way to do that is with NPM. So I'm going to NPM install Express. And in fact, I'm going to use this little flag that says, I want to write this into my package file, my package.json file, because I want to use this in the future. Actually, I forgot, I haven't made a package.json file yet, so let's do that first. That's very quick. npm init y, that creates me this package.json file, and now I can npm install express and save it, and it's going to put it in that package.json file as a dependency. Sometimes these installations take some time because what it's actually doing, well, it's already done, what it's actually doing is it is installing not only the dependency that I've defined, which is Express, but all of the dependencies that it needs. All of those are installed inside of the node modules folder. Let me look at that package.json file real quick and just show you that it's created Express as a dependency. And then let me do an ls, and you can see that it's created the node modules folder now. And if I go look in there, I can see Express. And if I go look in Express, I can see that it has its own node modules folder. And if I look in there, I can see all of its dependencies. So that's pretty cool that all of the dependencies are just right there. Okay. Now, if I node app, it's not going to complain about nothing being installed, but it's also not going to do anything. And that's because although I created my app, I'm not listening yet. So I'm going to listen on port 3000. Now I'll node app, and now it's like it freezes. Well, that's good news, because now I can jump out to my web browser and I can go to http://localhost, because this is running on localhost, 3000, and it says hello there. So believe it or not, I've actually just created a web server with this much code, very, very little code. Now, if I want to send this to Azure, which is kind of the point of our whole program here, there's one more thing that I want to do, and that is I need to not specify explicitly I want to use port 3000, because when we go into Azure, Azure's going to determine the port for us. It's going to help us with that. And so we can't just say 3000. So we need to say, look at the process. This is a variable that Node gives you. And then look at the environment and look at the port. And if that exists, use it. Otherwise, we're running locally and we don't have a process environment port. So just use 3000. Okay, so if I add that one little line, now it'll still work from the command line here. Let me break that and do it again and go back and refresh. And in fact, it still works, but now it's ready to work in Azure. Now, Tommy showed you how you can go into the portal, create your website either from scratch, ready for a deployment, or you can create it from the gallery so that you've got a Node.js app already written. But I'm going to show you how to create your web app from one that you've already created down here. Now I can just do Azure account list, and I'm not going to do that now because you'll see all my codes, but I'm going to do, you can do Azure account list and you can see which accounts you have working at the command line. What we have here is a command line tool for Azure, and this is the cross-platform command line tool. It's, the command is simply Azure. Well, how do you get that? Well, you do an npm install just like we just did, except you say, I want this to be a global installation, and I want to use the Azure CLI module. So let me just jump you out here and take you full circle. There is an Azure, there is a module in npm called Azure-CLI. It's just a module like any other, like one that you would use in your code, except you're going to use it as sort of a dev tool here. You're going to do npm install g Azure CLI. I'm not going to do it because I already have it, and that's going to give you the Azure command. And then you're going to either, I won't take you right through this, but you're going to either Azure account import and bring in a certificate, or you're going to Azure log in and you're going to log in with your credentials. That's what I've done. So now I can say something like Azure site list, and this is going to take just a little bit of time, but it's going to go get the sites that I have in my Azure subscription, and it's going to list them all out right here. Okay, there they are. Now let's go ahead and create a new one. I know I just kind of covered a lot of concepts right there with getting the CLI up and running, but there's some good documentation on that. And if you need some help, just find me on codefoster.com. Okay, so let's go ahead and run Azure site create. This is how I create a website in Azure, all right? And let's give it a name. Let's call it My First Node App, but I'm wondering if that's taken. So I'm gonna say My First Web App, My First Node App 38, all right? So now I'm going to add to this git. And you know what? I'm going to let the wizard prompt me for this name of the website. You don't have to do that on your own. You don't have to specify anything here. You can just do it in the wizard, except I am going to add the git flag because that tells it how I want to deploy, and it gives me the ability to deploy by way of git. So I'm going to go ahead and hit create. And the first thing that it's going to do is prompt me for a name. And this is where I'll say my first Node app 38. Now it's going to get a list of valid locations and ask me what location I want to use. I'm going to choose West US since I'm in Seattle. And now it's going to ask me what username I want to use for the deployment of this. And I already have my deployment credentials set up in Azure. So I'm going to use CodeFoster, which is my deployment credentials. And a few things just happened now. It has created this web app. If I went to the portal, I'd be able to see it. I won't take you there. But it's also created a thing called a service control manager. Look at this URL here. Not only do I get the myfirstnodeapp38.azurewebsites.net, but I also get this .scm. And this is basically a management website that facilitates the deployment by way of Git. And you can see, based on, I've got this utility that shows me when I'm in a Git repository, that I'm in a Git repository now. And if I say Git remote verbose, it's going to tell me that I have an Azure remote that is pointing at this SCM repository. Okay, so that's pretty slick. Now I can say Git add all, that adds everything in this working directory to my Git cache. And now I can Git commit with a message saying, this is my initial commit. There we go. Okay, so I've committed locally. I haven't pushed it yet. Now I can Git push to Azure, the master branch. And this is going to push that up to that service control management website, which deploys it to my website. So now it wants the password. I'm not going to tell you what that is. The service control management website receives it, runs a script, and says, hey, you know what? This looks like a Node website. So I'm going to go ahead and run this using IIS Node. And now it's done. You see at the end there, it says deployment successful. So now let's go back to our browser and let's go to my first nodeapp38.azurewebsites.net, and we should see, hello there. There we go. Okay, so we just created a website, ran it locally, and then we pushed it up to Azure by way of Git. You have to know too that not only can I push this with a simple Git push Azure master command, which is quite easy, but I have to push it every single time. I can also hook it up so that it's pointing directly to GitHub, which is awesome because that means anytime I just check into GitHub, Azure automatically looks over at GitHub, pulls that deployment, makes it live, and your website is always current with GitHub. And you can make it your master branch or a different branch. So really awesome continuous integration options there. Okay, now I've been doing everything in Notepad, which is by no means ideal. I want to show you two tools that we have that make your life really super awesome. The first one is one that we announced at Build this last year called Visual Studio Code. It's free, and from the command line, you can just type code to access it. You can code any file, so you can say app.js, and it'll open code at that file. But you can also code the current directory, and that's going to open Visual Studio Code at the current working directory. So you can see that it opens very quickly, and now I have as my current directory this app that we've been working on. There's app.js, the one that we were writing, and I can zoom in on that if I wanted to. And you can see that I'm getting some IntelliSense help here. Like it's saying, I can't find this name process. Like, I don't understand this right now. But I can go bring this in by saying, well, then go get me the type definition for Node. And it brings in a comment for Node.js. It's supposed to bring in a comment on this page. Let's try that again. Oh, it says it already exists. Make sure it's included in the project's JS config JSON. Okay, I haven't run into that before, but normally I hit this light bulb and bam, it brings in a /// comment on the top. And now it understands the inner workings of Node. And it's not only able to give me these squigglies, but when I'm actually typing things, it's able to say, oh yeah, I understand the .env, the .port, the IntelliSense works there. So that's really helpful. So Visual Studio Code it loves Node, and if for a lot of people that are working with Node, this is the app to use. The other thing that we have is Visual Studio, kind of the full edition of Visual Studio, and the free one is Community. So I'm going to open Visual Studio Community 2015, and if you're going to use that for pretty much any kind of project type, it's ready to go. If you're gonna do something that's outside of the fringe of normal, like if you're gonna make PHP apps, then go find the PHP tools for Visual Studio. If you're gonna write Node apps, then go find the Node tools for Visual Studio, and I'll just show you where those are. They're on GitHub, of course, and you go to the Microsoft repository /Node.js tools. We won't walk all the way through this, but the Node.js tools are right here. You just download those and install them. And what those give you is a whole bunch of help in Visual Studio. And in fact, just a little bit more than what you get in Visual Studio Code, because in Visual Studio, it gives you, in Code, you do get Node debugging. In Visual Studio Community, you get remote debugging, which is awesome. That means that you can have Node running in Azure, and from Visual Studio, you can debug your Azure process, which is awesome. That means when somebody hits your public website, you can have it break on your computer, which is really, really good for troubleshooting. So when you install those Node.js tools for Visual Studio, in here you'll get all kinds of facility, the ability to create new projects. You'll get the ability to do that remote debugging. You get profiling. You get just a whole lot of features. So let's see, Tommy, I kind of ventured from my deck, but I think I covered everything here. We talked about creating the project, the different ways to deploy. We actually went through the process of creating and deploying a simple Express website. I talked about the Node.js tools for Visual Studio and the different things that those give you, and we didn't actually install those because we're out of time. And then we also looked at Code and all of the advantages of using Visual Studio Code, and give you a quick tour of that. And here are some resources that I've got for everybody. There really are, if you're wanting to learn Node, there are a ton of resources on Pluralsight. If you want to go there and look those up. I made a course called Node.js and the Internet of Things using Intel Edison on Pluralsight. If you subscribe, or if you want to do the free trial subscription, you can go look at that. On Microsoft Virtual Academy, my colleague Stacy did Building Apps with Node.js Jumpstart, very helpful. And then there are a bunch of online courses and tutorials that you can do, or find a Node.js meetup in your area. Go there and just tell everybody, I'm trying to learn this stuff, who wants to help, and you'll find plenty of help. Woo, I think I went over on time there, Tommy. What do you think?
It's great stuff, Jeremy. I got a few more resource links here. We've got Node.js Jumpstart on Microsoft Virtual Academy. We also have Building and Publishing Node.js Applications with Azure Websites on TechNet Virtual Labs, where there's a link here where you can log in and get started. We provide the virtual environment for you to get started. There's Build and Deploy Node.js Applications on Azure. This is a link to the documentation on azure.com. And also Continuous Deployment for using Git. There's documentation there as well. Just a reminder, register for upcoming OSS on Azure webinars. There's the link at the bottom there, aka.ms/APAC-Azure events. Don't forget also a $200 free trial. Visit aka.ms/try-Azure, and that'll get you started with what you've seen today. I want to thank you for joining us. Jeremy, great show. Great stuff. Great talk. Probably could have spent another 8 hours going through stuff, but you know, we try to keep these as concise as possible. We're going to open up for some Q&A now, and we hope you enjoyed the show.